actually petty. Radio on your stereo. Don't compare us to anything. This a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order. Intellectually petty. Radio on your stereo. Don't compare us to anything. This a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Radio Network, y'all already know, man, it's only legends around here. And today is a special time. Never in the history of everdom have I had a show at 3:30 on a Thursday. But Headcrack is the superstar of all stars. The radio host, your favorite's favorite, the man with the velvet voice himself, Mr. Headcrack. How you doing, bro?
I'm chilling, man. And yo, thank you so much for, like, you know, making time in your schedule to make this happen earlier, man. I appreciate you, Jay.
Come on, man. I'm old and fat. I got nothing to do.
Well, you look good from this half. You know what I mean? So, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm great in a box. It's like Hollywood Squares, you know?
I always question, like, what were people wearing? Like, was it all business up top and, like, just, you know, just the bare minimum on the low? Like, you know, like, people always effort into the shirts when they
definitely pajamas on the bottom. Definitely pajamas.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the time.
Jam pants, you know, yeah. All that stuff. I'm rocking, you know, camouflage shorts.
Oh, I gotta get some. Matter of fact, do I have a pair of camera? I do. I bought a pair last year. I couldn't remember. Yo,
it's a universal outfit piece. I mean, camouflage goes with everything.
I think it's required if you're from New York, though.
Yeah, and like Tim colored shoes too. Yeah. Like even if they're not Tim, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like
They gonna kill you, fat. The Tim colored shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to break the. It's March. It's too early for actual Tims, so I'm gonna go with the Tim colored Ewings.
Oh, come on, bro! It's never too early for Tims.
Yo, you see the new Tims? I think Mischief is making them. Right, it's a collaboration with Timberland and Mischief, and like the bottom is like the, you know, like the heel of the shoes, like the bottom of the shoe. And they also made the top look like the bottom of the chute, so you could, like, double stomp somebody out.
I'm on the fence with those, too. They are intriguing and kind of ugly at the same time, so I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen uglier shoes get sold, rocked, supported, and that one spoke to my heart. I didn't want those space boots that they had, them red ones, a few months back with the Astro Boys, I think they was calling them. I didn't want those.
Yeah, those whole, but come on, bro.
But these, I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
Man, this generation will wear fucking anything.
Yeah, pretty much. And when you have young kids around you, like my kids, like, you know, like, what was a stupid idea to you a couple years ago? Like, well, I don't know, maybe. You know, like, as you're on the fence, I'm, like, climbing over the fence, but my shirt is snagged.
Yo. When at what point in life did you realize, you know what, I want to be in radio?
Okay, so it was around the late 90s, and I was working for different record companies. You know, sometimes, like, back in that infrastructure time, like, you know, we had to physically bring stuff to people if we weren't mailing it, right?
Right.
So you wanted that TLC approach. So I had an opportunity to really interact with a lot of radio DJs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And even before that, I used to call and win a lot of radio contests. So when I would go and meet these people and hang out with them, they were cool. And then I would see what kind of cars they had in the parking lot and the type of parties they got to go to. So I was always intrigued with radio in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to more so do is break new music. Because back then it wasn't as corporate as the game eventually it became. And you really could find something that you liked in the street, bring it on the radio, play it. So I kind of wanted to go that route. So when the opportunity presented itself and I started to see the way the music industry was shrinking, I was like, you know what? Now is the time. So a new station came. They didn't have no DJs. Me and my homies, we made a tape, made it sound like we had a show, and this is what the show sound like. They liked it enough and put us at night. Made us the nighttime show, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Yo, that's crazy.
very unique situation. It doesn't quite happen like that anymore. It's a little bit more like, you know, God put the right people in the right position at the right time for that perfect storm to happen.
I mean, you got the voice, though. You got the perfect mixture of the vocal tone and just enough New York and not too much New York where you don't sound like cigarette smoke.
I know what you're talking about, though. Like, you know, because there's some women from New York, you'd be talking to the phone, excuse me, sir. And it's like, oh, no, my name's Joan. Oh, my bad.
Oh, man.
It's the water. I believe it's the water.
Let me shut up before they be waiting outside my house, man.
I think it's the water jobs and then the smoke that be coming out of the vent. Like the smoke that come out of the sewer vent and the water, something in it.
Yo, okay, so how do you go from that to matter of fact, the first song that you broke.
Okay.
What was that? Which song was that?
Man. So around the time me, Super Can Kino got on the radio, this was November of 2000. That's when we started, right?
Okay.
So you had certain songs that were already set up on the playlist that they was already playing, but records that we leaned in on a little bit harder was, we were definitely always trying to like play Wu-Tang, whether it made sense or not. And this is around the time they had like the Iron Flag and the W album. So like, I definitely know we was like trying to hit that gravel pit. RZA's The Rumba was another joint that we was advocating very strong for during that time. Talib Kweli and DJ High Tech's The Blast was something that we was leaning on real tough. Okay. But, you know, aside from mainstream artists, it was really the local artists that we was really, really trying to put on for because, you know, some of these artists had machines and then you had the people that you just knew from like the club level, rocking parties and whatnot, doing like showcases. And it was groups like Apatamed, Native Poet, Shabazz 3, even Paul Waller, Chamillionaire was starting to break at that time. And we're hearing this sound coming from Houston. And I'm like, yo, we got to play this. Like, it's the same state. It only makes sense. So we was right there on the Dallas side of things when that Houston thing started to break a little bit harder. Because you already had, like, Wanna Be a Baller by, like, Pastor, you know, Lil Troy. And
yeah.
I think Young Star was on that. But there was also the screwed up click dudes was rapping different.
Was killing shit.
Yeah, Slim Thug. Damn, Fat Pat, all those guys, you know. So like, even though it was different than the New York rap that I liked, I respected the sound because it was something different. So we really just wanted to make sure everything was advocated for in the music space, because a lot of times in music, you know, especially commercial radio, they will only show you one side of the pillow and not let you know that the other side cool too.
Yeah, man, and man, like Houston, really. What happened to Dallas?
So the thing about Dallas, right, and maybe it's changed because I haven't lived there in years now, right?
Okay.
So like when I was there, what I was noticing is Dallas always followed whatever was popular as a city. But in addition to that, Dallas, almost like Atlanta, had a little bit of everybody from everywhere there, right? Okay. So you would have some people who would rap in Dallas who would be told, you don't represent the sound of Dallas, but it's like, but I live here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am one of the sounds of Dallas. You know what I mean? Like, I used to always catch a lot of flack about not sounding like I'm from Dallas, but what does Dallas really sound like? Because there's people here from everywhere. Not everybody sound like they from Oak Cliff or Stop Six or Fort Worth or Bonton or whatever. So I think a lot of times the people got in their own way as to what they were willing to accept as the sound of the city. And then sometimes when certain people would start to pop off, they would try to sound so local that it localized their sound to where they never, achieve the status that they could have had. Like, you know, when I saw Duro starting to break, I'm like, hell yeah. Somebody we know from the city that's starting to pop off. But then I think when people started criticizing him for sounding too national, he's like, all right, cool. Let me tweak my sound and sound like I'm from Dallas. But once again, what the fuck does that sound like? Right? So it's frustrating because like there's a lot of people who are talented and can pull it off. And you've seen some successes in the last few years, like Yella Beezy, Brianna Banks, the, you know, Bust It song. I mean, like, one of those is not my favorite, but, you know.
Yo, let me ask you, how do you, like, there's times where I know you had to play shit that you just absolutely hated.
Usually.
How do you pump that up? Because you, I never heard you on the, and I used to listen to you.
Okay.
I never heard you like the inflection change or it, you gave off that, oh, I really hate this song, but I got to play it.
You were listening out of what city, though?
I'm in Cleveland.
Cleveland. So you was listening to us on the morning show. So yeah. One thing about the morning show is we didn't really back sell records much. We just came out and just did our thing. So you would catch my smoke whenever I do the hip hop spot or whatever. You know what I'm saying? That's when I would throw my little like jabs at things, right? Because morning radio was different because once you become syndicated, you have more than just one PD who has something to say about what you said. So once you're on in like 40, 50 plus cities, you know, 12 of them might have found what you said funny, but the program director is like, yo, you just insulted the number one song on our playlist. Da, 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 da. So, you know, I think they kept us out of a lot of nonsense by just like we didn't back sell records. Like we would come out of the song and do the talk break and whoop de woo. But back when we was on nights, yo, we would shoot songs. Like when they would come off, we would cut them early. We cut them off early. He's like, yo, you know what that sound like? And just keep pushing. And
that's wild, bro.
But we was able to do that, man. We came in the wild, wild west. So that's why, like, over time, I fell out of love with it because when I came in, we had so much freedom and so much fun. And the more successful I became within the business, the less freedom I had to really, really do what I really wanted to do in that space.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is I had the least amount of freedom when I had, and I say this in air quotes, my own show. So it was crazy. But like the first 2-3 years that I was, me, Super K, Kino was doing nights, that was like my golden era of radio and the funnest time I ever had doing it.
How you end up with Ricky Smiley?
So my night show was number one numerous times in the city. Mm-hmm. And Steve Harvey worked for the company and he was leaving because the company that we worked for at the time don't necessarily always recognize talent and treat talent well. So he's like, I'm out. So kind of like Luke Skywalker in the end of The Empire Strike Back, he left just to come back even stronger later on down the road. So in his absence, the company needed a morning show that could not only fill that gap left by Steve in Dallas, but also potentially get syndicated. Mm-hmm. And I think by like year two, maybe three, we were starting to get syndicated because, you know, we picked up the torch and kept running. So they took me from the night show, paired me with Ricky. Then it was Rock T, there was Gary. And over a span of like the 14 years I was there, like 15 different female co-hosts. And, you know, it was a hell of a ride. And I don't think it'll be almost impossible to catch that kind of lightning in a bottle ever again.
Okay.
With that many dynamic personalities all under one roof, rocking out for as long as we did, and they still continue to do, because, you know, it's still a show.
Yeah. You know who surprised me the most? The Brat.
Oh, were? Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody really thought about her as a radio host.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was good.
Yo, the thing is, like, yo, there's so many layers of The Brat that people don't know, because, like, you only got so much from her music and, you know, whatever The Brat, you know, perception or persona is perceived to be through videos and TV. You know what I mean? Like, yo, she a big teddy bear. She hates compliments. You know what I'm saying? Even though she's worthy of all of them. And, you know, and she's really rocking this mom thing. And yeah, she's great on the radio. She has an opinion. She has comedic timing. You know what I'm saying? She does well on the radio and on Dish Nation. And, you know, she is, man, I used to, man, like, as a person who used to read rap magazines, like, to be able to be in a room with The Brat every day and get to rap with her on Fridays when we would do the Flow and Go freestyles. Meanwhile, you got Ed Lover in the room next, you know, next door with Moni Love doing their radio show. Like, I was living in an episode of Yo MTV Raps.
Yo, Moni, I used to love Moni Love. Oh, my God. I haven't seen her in a while, so I don't know.
She still looks the same. That's the crazy thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes, you know, like, the people that you used to like look like uppercase versions of themselves as time get you know goes by.
Yeah.
And some people look just like they used to looking better. And Moni Love still look good. Like, work.
Yo. What channel is she on now?
She's on a station in Atlanta. Kiss 105.1, Adult Contemporary. I think she do like the afternoons.
Oh, yeah, check her out. Still got the accent too, right?
Still got the accent. Still sounded like, you know, God Save the Queen.
Oh, God.
With a little bit of East Coast stank on it. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness, man. I'm about to cut the interview short and go watch her.
And she just dropped a single about a year and some change ago at this time. And it was dope.
Yo, I heard your new shit recently too, bro.
Okay.
How did the rap career get overshadowed?
Because you saw me do one particular thing 5 days a week, and sometimes I would rap.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It was one of those things, like, on the radio side, I didn't want to beat it to death. Because I've seen people beat it to death. Like, to where it's like, we get it. You rap. You know what I mean?
But did the pendulum swing too far the other way?
I definitely think it did. But hit the cool space that I get to occupy is... I am still on the campaign trail and winning people over who didn't know I could rap versus people who knew I rap and just don't care. You know what I mean? So I'd rather make new impressions versus people already have an impression and they're just not rocking with it. So,
okay. You
know, it's the scenic route. And, you know, I wish I would have popped off in the physical copy era, because I hate this streaming stuff with my whole heart. And you know, because like you got to do everything. You got to make music. You got to sell flat tummy tea. You got to you know what I mean. Like you got to do infomercials. You know, you got to be on Cameo. You got to be on OnlyFans. And I just want to like make music and have people physically buy it, hold it in their hands, read liner notes, and come see me when I do these songs live.
Man, that was such a, and I've tried to explain that, like the whole, especially depending on, like, I remember when Snoop came out,
mm-hmm.
You know, when Doggy Style dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. When Illmatic dropped, shit was like a neighborhood function.
Mm-hmm.
You had your own, you know, everybody had their own little go buy your tape or CD procedure. You know, you and your boys around a box. It was a beautiful, everybody want to read the liner notes. It was a beautiful thing. You know, you're passing one in the air. Life was good, man. It's easier to get the music now, but it means less.
Yo, like, kids today will never understand the struggle of saving their lunch money and not eating on certain days just so you can go buy the new LL Cool J tape or just to go cop, you know, the new Nas or Ice-T or whatever the hell it was that you was into at that time. So because of streaming and the way, like, you know, even on the radio side, I used to, like, be on hold on the phone all the time trying to request a song I knew they probably weren't going to play because it wasn't even, like, an A-side single, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can just pull out your phone and listen whatever song you want to listen to at your own convenience. So it makes the music kind of like a passive thing and not something that you had to make a special appointment with to go make it happen. Same thing's happening with movies too. You know, I talk about it all the time. Like, you know, with the streaming and the things that be like Netflix exclusives, because you didn't have to like break your neck to go to the movies to go see it. You know what I mean? I remember what food I smuggled in to see certain movies back in the day, right? With Netflix, you'll see something dope
and forget about it.
And then forgot that you saw it because you won't be flipping through the channels later on. And, you know, the Will Smith movie when he was a cop with the alien, like Bright won't just happen to be on. So if it's not on that splash page when you log in, it's out of sight, out of mind, and it doesn't have that real estate in your brain as much as that thing that you had to hop in the car, train, bus, whatever. You and your friends all went to the movies and you remember what trailers you saw before the movie came on, you know, so it's convenient, but it also cheapens the memories of certain things.
Yo, I remember the smell of the theater for Crush Groove.
Woo, you got to see that in theaters.
Yeah, I walked. We walked probably, because I want to say the Northwest was, let's see, we on 7 miles, so I don't know, maybe 2 miles away. Mm-hmm. And we walking like in top tens, you know, we fresh and walking. And man, that shit, it was Black Panther for my generation.
I feel you. How packed was the theater? Was it packed at all?
That shit was packed. It was a line out the door. That wow. shit was, oh my God. And when LL came in and boxed, and it was, ah! It was a concert in there. I'm telling you, man. One of the highlights of my life as far as entertainment goes.
Yo, so before that movie, though, because I saw it after it was in theaters, I think either I rented it at the video store or whatever. Mm-hmm. LL wasn't even out then. Right, so like that was really your true introduction to LL Cool J, like that movie.
I don't know if I Need a Beat was out before then.
Okay,
I can't remember. It might have been, but for all intents and purposes, that was his moment, and bro capitalized.
Yeah, I mean, even too, when you look at that pocket of time, like in the 80s, early 90s, we didn't really have a lot of opportunities to see us. You know, in that big screen. I think before that there was Beat Street, you know, which was dope, you know, for what it was, but it wasn't as hip hop as Crush Groove was.
Well, it wasn't a national thing at the time. You know, like Crush Groove was like a big movie. Mm-hmm. And Beat Street was like the first indie movie, so to speak. I don't know if it was on a major, you know, whatchamacallit, but it wasn't in the theater that I recall.
Got you. Like, I remember seeing the trailers for it when I was a kid, but that was another one of those ones. It was weird. Like when I tell people about the movies that my parents took me to see when I was younger, it was like all horror movies. Cause like that was me and my mom's thing. Like, cause I could take it. You know what I mean? And even when I would go back home, like HBO, like having cable back when I was a kid, me and you had HBO, right?
Yeah.
So anytime horror movies would come on HBO, I'm in it. Mom's watching it with me too. And whenever horror movies would go to the theaters, like me and my mom together, we at the movies. And it was like, so I missed a lot of like, you know, of like those monumental hip hop movies. I did see the Disorderlies in theaters.
I don't know.
So that at the Whitestone Cineplex in
I don't like, think that's a monumental hip hop movie. It's a monumental art movie for an hip hop artist. Mm-hmm. But not a hip hop movie.
Okay, so my lens that I view that through mm-hmm. is still with the same lens. Like, yo, you don't really get to see us on the big screen like that, right? So yeah. By this point, I've now watched Crush Groove like 500 times on VHS, wore the tape out. So what you're telling me is the three funny dudes from Crush Groove got their own movie? You know what I mean? Like, to me, it was an unofficial sequel. Like, they won the rap contest.
And then it became about it like that.
Doctor Nurses. You know what I mean?
That was a wild. But yo, I they don't get enough credit.
They don't. Yo, and yo, it makes me sad how little respect they put on the Fat Boy's name.
Yeah.
Because even when, you know, because like, I never got a chance to meet Buffy. Mm-hmm. But me and Prince Mark Eddie were very cool. God bless the dead. And now I talk to, you know, Cool Rock Ski, you know, on social media, like, you know, DMs and whatnot. And like, I would just be shocked because when I met Prince Monkey D, he was actually DJing. He was working on 99 Jams in Miami. And that was a station that the Ricky Smiley Morning Show was also affiliated with, too. Mm-hmm. So anytime we would go to Miami, like I would always like run into Prince Monkey D and I would just be so excited. And it's like, wow, man, like I grew up watching you and you're down to earth, you're cool, but how come people aren't picking you up in the air and parading you like Simba? Like, they don't get it. And I also, like, started to realize that not everybody loves hip-hop the way I do. And I can't expect everybody to love hip-hop the way I do. I'm on an interview, baby. You got to go.
Hi.
You can't, because, like, we have a certain amount of time and we're recording. So I'm going to holler at you just a little bit, kiddo. I love you. Mwah. All right. Yeah, like not, you know, everybody don't love hip hop the way I do.
I love
you know?
That, bro.
Huh?
I love that.
Oh man, that's you know, he would have sat up here, he would have tried to answer all the questions. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, he wanted
where does he get that from?
Not me. I always pick my spot. Like, I never walk in the room and be like, yo, it's all about me. No one's time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, timing. It's like a double dunch. You know, but I remember one of the coolest things, like, even, you know, keeping it on Fat Boys for a second. We were doing one of those shows that the 99 Jams had put on, was concert shows. Mm-hmm. And like Rick Ross was performing, and so was Ice Cube. Prince Marky D had never met Ice Cube. And I'm like, how did that not ever happen? So I had just got finished interviewing Ice Cube. I was like, hold on, I'm gonna make this happen. So I introduced them to, and it just like fell back, and it was just like watching proudly as, you know, two people who I admire from this culture that we celebrate so well, meeting each other for the first time. And that's, I just crazy. Thought that would have been a no-brainer.
That's, you know, crazy.
Because even when you think about all these hybrid tours that used to go around back in the day, because I remember, like, De La Soul used to tour with NWA, right? So, like, damn, man, there wasn't no incarnation of, like, the Fat Boys and, like, NWA on the same bill? Damn, I guess not, right? No Fresh Fest, nothing. So it was just, it's cool to be able to be a student and also be a facilitator or even hall monitor sometimes in this culture to, like, help people get from point A to point B, no matter where they at in the biz.
Like, the Fat Boys and Houdini.
Oh, yeah.
It's a crime how little, not just the casual fan, but how real hip-hop heads ignored their greatness.
Yeah. Like, Houdini was so ahead of the time.
Oh, my God.
So ahead of their time. And, you know, and I run into Ja Lil fairly, semi-regularly. Mm-hmm. And just such a humble spirit. And so appreciative of anybody who, you know, just acknowledges what it is. Because I just guess not everybody give it up like that. But when I listened to the first two albums, Back in Black and Escape, the science that went in, like, they made their second album in Europe.
I didn't know
and
that.
That's why it sounds so different than everything that came out that year. Because they spent that whole year in Europe recording that album with, Larry Smith. Yeah, I think so. Larry Smith and him, they went over to Europe, worked on that album for a year. You get all them crazy Larry Smith synthesizers and the live, like, you know, bass guitar. I mean, it was such a great album. And I think the toughest thing that the first waves of hip hop artists had to figure out was how to evolve as the game changed. And I think Houdini kind of got caught in that shift. Because, like, I think when it came out with the album Bag of Tricks, this had to be like 91, 92.
Yeah, shit was changing.
The game was in a different space.
Yeah.
And they either needed to sit out until it was time to do it again. But then again, you can't stay away too long because this is hip hop and people forget about you. So it, even right now, it's a tough space to navigate. I think the only people who really figured it out was like Jay-Z, Nas.
And I'm going to be honest with you, Nas, I won't say he figured it out. Mm-hmm. He weathered the storm.
Yeah, because there was a couple albums where, like, people was like, what we doing, Nas? Like, what we doing, bro? Like,
come on, stop it. But... Yo, and I think Run DMC and LL were so huge at a time when the industry didn't think hip hop was going to last.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the focus and energy, for the most part, went towards those two. Anybody else on the tours, it was cool. And right. Houdini's live show was phenomenal, by the way. Ridiculous.
When I finally got a chance to see Houdini live, it was actually in Ohio somewhere at a football game, kind of. It was like a black college football thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even in that scenario, it was dope. And then I got a chance to see them again like a year or two later at like a, you know, like a Legends of Hip Hop thing at the where the Hawks play basketball here.
Okay.
And it held up well, you know what I mean? And I hate that we lost Ecstasy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Ja Lil, you know, like, he's not in the best of health. And I, you know, I was glad that I got to see them, man. But I just really want to see Ja Lil and Grandmaster D get the love that they deserve for their contributions, man, because you see their DNA and a lot of things. And I don't think the people whose DNA they people who are carrying their DNA, I don't even think they understand where they got it from.
They were Uptown Records before Uptown Records.
Yeah, like sophisticated.
Yeah.
But still street still, fun. We got a party, you know what I mean?
You know, a little tinge of R&B. Mm-hmm. You know, Andre Harrell. Oh, man, we can go on forever. Like, people don't get the credit they deserve. Okay, so why leave Ricky Smiley?
So the year was 2018, 2019-ish, right? Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm just, like, frustrated with a lot of things in the business, right? Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to put more energy into music and acting. So I was about to leave radio just altogether, regardless, mm-hmm. once my contract was up. Because, I mean, like, shoot, like, had a hell of a run with that. We've been number one in places. You know, in radio, the highest plateau that one can get on is, like, be on mornings and be syndicated in mornings. If you really want to, like, go for the extra mile, like, all right, we're in New York or we're on in California. But the cities that we was on, it was good enough. So I felt like I did what I needed to do, and I was ready to bounce. But then Tom Joyner announced he was retiring. Ricky and Ricky's show was going to get moved over to that Tom Joyner slot. And they needed somebody to kind of hold down that hip hop space on a younger end. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's dope. I'll do it. Yeah, let's go. You know what I mean? Just give it a run and see how it felt to really, like, you know, pilot the ship dolo and make it happen. Not 100% dolo, but, you know, I like, hey, yeah, but it quickly unraveled and was not what I thought I was. I didn't sign up for what I thought I was signing up for.
Did you choose the participants?
No. Not at all. The fight was fixed. Because what happened was, so the company was going to launch two shows, right? Two new morning shows.
Okay.
One was going to be overseen by one person, and another one was being overseen by another person.
Okay.
The one that was being overseen by another person, they already launched that show quietly in another city, and it wasn't doing well, right? Mm-hmm. And the person who was supposed to oversee my show had some issues with the company. Ended up not being with the company no more, right? So the person who was overseeing the other show is now in control of everything, right? Ooh. And they said, okay, cool, we'll just take him and put him with these people, and we'll see how it goes. And instantly, there was a shift in numbers, you know, because, like, I was the familiar piece to the puzzle, and I really truly know what I'm doing, and I'm not cocky at all, but I know what the fuck I'm doing, especially when it comes to radio. You know what I mean? I've watched a lot of people do things right. I watched a lot of people do things wrong. I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone and let me do this, right? So between point A and point B, there was, like, some other slots that needed to be filled as it regarded to comedians and things like that. And there was some great people who I recommended. And this schmuck would conveniently book the people that I requested to try out on the weeks that I wasn't available to be there with that person. So then they ended up bringing in my man, Billy Sorrells, who I actually grew to be a fan of. Mm-hmm. They tried him out, I think, on a day that I wasn't there either. And then when I come to see him for the second time, he's like, yeah, he already got the job. And I'm like, nigga, what? However, the more and more I got to talk and hang out with Billy, I'm like, oh, yeah, Billy, cool. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, he leads a wild life, but yo, Billy, cool. So looking at everything for what it was, and I'm also, like, a low-key psychologist, when I could say the word, I already knew in what order everyone was not going to be on the show no more. I already knew. Because I understand people, and I understand people and their motives. So when people do... And I'm not talking about in that situation, but when people do bad things, I don't look at a person and be like, that's a bad guy. I'm like, all right, what is the motive driving this person to do the things that they're doing? Because sometimes you'll find out that, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I would have reacted the same way you reacted.
Yeah.
So looking at things through those lenses, I could tell who wasn't going to be happy, who wasn't going to work out, whose mentality was this, who was that. And it went exactly how it did in my head. And then when it came time for me to renegotiate, you know, after like 3 years of a pandemic, being lied to, having people on the back end trying to set me up and, like, you know, say certain things and get caught in lies, you know what I'm saying, that I have all documented, right? I definitely didn't make it easy for them to renew my contract, but I also didn't want to stay. So I put myself in a position to where, like, hey, guess what? We could just throw our hands up. We just both walk away slowly. And I wish y'all the best of luck. And that's kind of what happened with that. But it was a very frustrating scenario because I had more fun and more freedom on a show that wasn't mine. But when you find out that because of the way certain, like, dominoes fell, the show never was yours. Yeah. And what a lot of companies will do just to create dissension and confusion amongst the people that work there is they will show you a gun, tell you it's yours and just put it on the table. But they said it to everybody. So this type of mentality was also a heavy root of, you know, like, some of the issues that we had. But I am a professional problem solver, right? I like to try to fix things.
You missed the political too, bro. Like, I've seen you do interviews specifically about this. I researched because I wanted to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. I know you're not going to say anything too outlandish because at some point you may want to go back in the radio.
I definitely do want to go back in the radio, but it has to be under the right circumstance.
I got you.
I'm not a fan of
old girl though.
A lot of people aren't.
I can't listen. And this is just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. And it's messy.
That's the product of a certain pocket of the generation. You know what I mean? And me being a person who doesn't operate like that, I'd rather build more bridges than enemies. I'm very calculated in what I do or what I lend my energy to.
Yeah.
And there's some people who just want to go viral or who just want to make a moment just so they could be seen having that moment. And sometimes the car's going to blow up right in front of your face. I think a lot of people saw the interview that, you know, happened with, you know, my man from Creed. Like, right around the same time I left the show, like that same week that footage came out. Mm-mm. And it's like, hey, man, like, sometimes the things you do and say will catch up to you. So you either Thanks. Need to make sure everything you're saying is factual. You have a good reason and intent for why you're saying the things you say. And if you're dead wrong, you got to own up to it in real time and say, yo, I was wrong. I miscalled that.
Yeah. When you left the show, I stopped listening. I'm going to keep it a buck. And to the point where I hear a voice, I turn the radio off. I don't even turn the station. I turn it off.
I appreciate your support. And I would be a liar if I said, man, no, you need to give the show a try. Like, no. Like, there's very few people. Like, I want to see everybody succeed in life except a few people. And not saying that she's one of those people. But I'm also not saying, like, there's just a few people that I'd be okay if they didn't succeed.
I'm with you on that. Like, I'm not one of those people that you shouldn't burn bridges. Some bridges you need to destroy, blow up, eliminate. And not because of that person.
Go back that way again.
Right. You don't need the temptation of going back that way. Because exactly. That person is never going to change. They ain't going to be ain't shit for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Because, like, when I come to you and with my friendship and my transparency, and you give me anything less than that,
we got a problem.
Like, I don't need to treat you like a human anymore at this point. You know what I mean?
Who are you listening to nowadays?
Man, musically, I rock with, I hate streaming. I can't stress that enough. However, some of these daggone, like between Apple Music and Spotify, like, let's just say if I said I want to listen to Busta Rhymes' Czar off of Extinction Level 2, like that song. Mm-hmm. It'll go from that song and play something in a similar universe that maybe I have heard or I haven't heard that's just as dope and just as good. So I have been Shazamming and saving a lot of things that I've been stumbling across in the last couple months. And it's been dope. There was a dude yesterday. Let me see if my Spotify is still up. And it's not even hip hop. It's it's either a white dude or a light-skinned black dude in a ski mask singing. But it's soulful. And he dope as hell. Hold on. Let me see if I can find my...
Speaking of ski masks, have you listened to Great God?
That's an artist?
Yes.
I have not listened to Great God. I have not.
Oh, I think he's Rock Marciano's artist.
Okay. Anything that Rock Marciano's rocking with is going to be solid off top. Like, Rock, he's another one of those ones who just needs more attention and love than he currently gets. And I know he has his cult following because I went to go see him about a year ago when he came and rocked out here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was like maybe four women there. However, everybody knew every word. Everybody knew every word. And the women that were there, they were tough women. Very tough women. But the core demo that came to support Rock Marciano, they was with the Shenanigans. That artist I was talking about, Pale J.
Pale J. I'm going to have to check that out. I've never heard of that one.
He is so consistent with singing and wearing his damn ski mask while he sings. And the music is dope. I also like this group, Crew Banging. They're like a band, but they sometimes be doing hip hop covers, and they also have songs. They really dope. What else I've been listening to the other day? I mean, and on the hip hop space, a lot of times I find myself like going back to just classic music, man. Like, you know, De La, Tribe Called Quest. I mean, West Side Gun, J.I.D., Killer Mike.
You know, the big thing with Killer Mike, man, and it frustrates me is when the old heads be like, well, why you don't know Killer Mike? I had to tell, you know, like, I don't know, maybe last month, I posted. I'm like, look, man, y'all got to stop acting. Y'all stop lying. Y'all niggas didn't support Killer Mike when he was his wave.
Mm-hmm.
Don't act like, if these young niggas don't know Killer Mike, it's because they didn't see you listening to Killer Mike.
Nah, that's true. I mean... It goes back to that the thing I was saying about the Dallas mentality. Like, sometimes people will follow the direction that everybody's following.
Yeah.
Like, I started really following Killer Mike because I'm not going to front like I was on the bandwagon from the very beginning. Like, when I heard him on The Whole World with Outkast, I'm like, he's dope.
Yeah.
He can definitely rap. I forgot what the big single was off of Monster. I think it was Adidas. But he didn't catch my attention again, really, until... That rap music mixtape that he did, I think that's the one that has the Ric Flair song on there. Reagan's on there. So rap music is like, oh, whoa, he could rap and he picked good beats. And then after that, he came out. See, and this ain't even on his iTunes discography. He had a mixtape, and it was like one out of a series that he did. He had a song called Ric Flair on there where he like sampled Ric Flair like before Offset and them did it. And he was just murdering the beat and just rapping ferociously. And from that moment on, I was like, you know what? Killer Mike. And then when he started doing the Run the Jewels stuff with another person who I felt was like savagely underrated, LP from Company Flow, for two people to be so different, but so dope together, It was a breath of fresh air musically, man. So to see him get his flowers and also get arrested the same night, very Killer Mike, right?
That was wild.
It is wild. People are doing too much, you know, like the security people.
Yeah, that was so unnecessary. Like,
very.
Like,
and it was a citizen's arrest.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
That night I would have beat up a citizen.
Yeah, we would. Oh, my God. Oh, you know I'm going to take me out to Grammys, bro, just because you here.
Yeah, you don't got no walkie-talkie or gun? No, we're going to fight.
Yeah, my people are going to fight you. I'm going to go celebrate.
Oh, yeah, you got to do the...
Yeah, yeah. It's a snap happening. It's some snap. Okay, give me your best MC producer combo.
Best MC producer combo. I mean, we talked about it briefly earlier, man. I mean, there's a lot to be said about someone who can release 6 albums in 3 years. Like, Nas and Hit-Boy, man. Like, the quality and the quantity speaks volumes. Is there a song that we're still going to be playing in 10 years off there? I don't know. because now we're in this space where
yeah.
certain songs that were hits or big songs that still stuck to your ribs also had that component of maybe we saw your video on Rap City, which there is no more, or you're on TV Raps, which there is no more, or some of these things were programmed to you from because you heard them on the radio. So sometimes when a whole room full of people can't touch and agree that this was their favorite song because it wasn't necessarily a well-promoted single, it does leave a lot of things lost in the sauce as to was this a big song or a hit record, or it was just a song you really liked a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, but damn, but I'm trying to think anybody else who had like just a hell of a run. I don't know
about the hell of a run, but when they like for me, Boldy and Alchemist.
Yo, crazy. I haven't heard anything I didn't like out of those two.
Crazy.
Like Alchemist, there's a couple producers who I feel like don't let nobody down, no matter how good or bad the artist is. And Alchemist makes everybody sound great. And so does DJ Muggs. Like, I don't know if you ever heard any of these DJ Muggs side projects that he do, like with entire albums. I know he did one with Mayhem Loren. He might have did two of them. And even some of these compilations. I heard a record recently with CeeLo that somehow escaped me when it came out originally. And it was like, how did I miss this? This is great.
Really?
Yeah. But nah, Boldy James is a wave. Like, Cali doing some dope things. Because it's too big of a state for everybody to rap the same, and they're showing you that.
Well, like, that's not Cali. Boldy is straight up Detroit.
Oh, I stand corrected. Yes. And
that's the hometown.
Don't take my rap card, man. Don't take my rap card.
We was about to show up at your door, bro.
I felt like I saw his name adjacent with a lot of West Coast people at some point in time, but that explains a lot. Like, yo, Detroit isn't for it to be built like a fist, right? And not be as big as a California, right? There are like 20 different rap styles that you can find in Detroit on any given day. Like,
yo,
you will have an Elzai and you will also have a, damn it, I just saw the guy's name today. I want to say Translor Z, but that's a classic Japanese cartoon.
Icewear
Vezo.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's all over the place. Slum Village.
Yeah.
J Dilla, Bizarre, Eminem, Royce the 5'9", Book Brown. All these people rap different. You ain't up on Book Brown?
I am not up on Book Brown.
Female MC. One of the best there is. Used to be signed to Mellow Music. May still be signed to Mellow Music. Out of Detroit, she real dope. She real dope. I actually met her when she lived in Atlanta, but then she moved back to Detroit. But yeah, Book Brown is a problem. And she's such a dope human on top of that, too. So yeah, definitely put Book Brown on your radar. And I think I saw on her social media she got some stuff coming, too.
Yeah, that's where I was born and raised, so... Like I feel. Matter of fact, I went to Dilla Day. It was 2 weekends ago. Oh my god, man!
I can only imagine that it was. You know, and I hate that I've never made it to a Detroit Dilla Day. I have gone to Dilla Day in the A,
mm-hmm.
but you got to go on a home turf to really get that energy and that juice from it.
Yo, it was in some hole in the wall spot. I've never even been to that side of town in all my existence. And this shit was just lit. I mean, it was so hip hop that they were just playing beats at one point. And the whole crowd is just like this. And I'm just like, man, this just takes you back. You know, to what made you fall in love with hip hop?
It was about... I mean, I think being in the Bronx in the early 80s, and I think as humans, we're always designed to want to gravitate towards that thing that people kind of vilify. And, you know, people who watch this who may be under 30 may not understand this, but there were stations whose whole moniker is, we're the station that don't play rap. Or some stations wouldn't play rap till like after midnight. Or... rap would just not get played on the radio during the day, but maybe you'd hear that Melly Mel break on I Feel For You by Chaka Khan, or when Ralph Tresvant would rap on Cool It Now and pass the mic to Bobby. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, you're taking it way back now, nigga.
I mean, but in the beginning, you were microdosing hip hop.
Facts.
You know what I mean? So going even back to the movie conversation we was having earlier, like, so anytime you had an opportunity to see any hip hop content on the screen, whether it be Breaking One or Two, Crush Groove, Beach Street, Disorderlies, the Mario Van Peebles movie Rapping, which was a little cringy, but the
a lot cringy.
A lot. Yeah, like man. Man, I remember I was at Walmart one day and it was like a 6 DVD pack, right? And it was all good, but that one was in there. And I was like, nah, something else. The dude's name was Rappin' Hood. Like, come on, man. Come on. And then when they would use Rap Bad in certain things, I remember there was like a movie. There was a, you remember what NBC used to do to NBC exclusive movies?
Oh my God, Jesus.
So there was one called like Driving School, and it was this Asian kid who would rap sometimes for no reason, and it was bad, and I hated it. I hated it with my whole heart. Like, and anytime the Asian kid would come around, they would play some like dinky like rap, like it was supposed to be like some. And it was almost like AI made a rap beat for the Asian kid every time he popped up on the screen.
That's horrible. I'm so glad I didn't see that. That's horrible.
Yo, oh I God. Will find the link and I'm gonna just the parts with him rapping. It's called Driving School. I think the kid, the Asian dude's name was Ichi or some shit like that. Yo, oh, man.
That's
even at 7 years old, I was like, this is some bullshit.
I'm not gonna lie, like Breaking was pretty cringe too. It just had memorable scenes. Mm-hmm. But the actual movies.
When you try to watch Breaking as an adult, you question the relationship between those two. Among other things, right? Like, I remember I gathered my kids in the living room one day. I was like, yo, we go watch these Breaking movies in order.
What was they on Punishment or something?
I mean, you know, like, you want people to love the things you love, right? So, like, you know, like, so it was like, I think it was still during the pandemic. And, like, I got one of them. It was either Amazon or Walmart DVD 3-pack. It was like Breaking One and Two and Beach Street all in a 3.
Wow, they put those together?
Yeah, they did. It makes sense because they all kind of came around the same time.
Yeah, but Beach Street made you want to move to New York and see for yourself. And yeah. Breaking was just like, okay. I don't know, man.
I always
The broom scene was dope.
Legendary. And when my man was like breakdancing on the ceiling, that too. And then when my man fell down the steps in the second Breaking movie, and you could tell it was a stunt double.
I don't even remember anything about
that. That's how he ended up breaking his leg and ended up in the hospital when he was trying to save Miracles.
Oh my God.
And the crazy thing, because I always think about movies like, hey, what happened after?
Why the fuck do you remember that, man?
I was raised by television and I'm a geek about mine. So here I am, so as a kid, right, watching Breaking 2, and it's like, yeah, they save Miracles today, but what about next month? When the investor comes back with even more money to try to buy that land and turn it to a mall. You won today. But the dollar's undefeated.
Oh my God.
I was hoping they would make a Breaking 3 and Lee from Beach Street would be in it. Like, you know, kind of like how they do like a Law and Order SVU and Criminal Intent crossover. Like, I just always wanted them to bridge the East and the West Coast of dancing. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. That would. Thank God that never happened, bro.
The time for it to happen would have, it was a very small window and it would have had to happen immediately.
Oh man, Beach Street was from beginning to end just a really good movie that I could still, even though it's, you know, old, I can watch it today and still enjoy it.
You know what? HBO did such a good job of promoting that movie, because you remember when HBO used to show music videos in between the movies?
Yo, HBO was it for a couple years. Man, HBO was lit.
Yo, there was a song called This Will Be the Night, and they used to play that music video sometimes, and it had scenes from the movie in there, because I guess it was on the soundtrack, and like it made me want to watch Beach Street even more. It's like, yo, is this coming on next? Like, why are you showing me this video now? Like, the Splash would come on.
Yo, and I know we ain't got but a few more minutes. What's next for you?
Oh, man, so I got this new EP called Microdose, which is dropping in April, and this is a collection of... Man, songs that you'll feel better after listening to the project. If you're having a crappy day, you'll pop it in. you're going to be mad. You're going to get in your feels. You're going to reflect. And you're going to feel bigger after listening to it. And, you know, the leadoff single was Violence. Then I chased that with a joint called For the Love. Then it was Sumo. Then it was Mona Lisa Scars. My current single that I'm working from that right now is Trouble Don't Last Always, produced by Zaytoven. And it is crazy because I would never think I would, you know, jump on a Zaytoven beat. And there was a beat that he played for me that just really spoke to me. And yo, man, I had such a weird love and hate relationship with the body of work sometimes, mm-hmm. where it's like, I don't know if I like every song on here. But then when I would listen to every song, I was like, yo, I love these songs. Because it was such a departure for what I was used to doing, my comfort zone. So I definitely think when you listen to this joint as intended, in order, you're gonna connect with the material in a certain way. It's a great album to work out to. It's a great album to meditate to. It's a great album to decalcify your brain from the BS of the day. Because every song is a yin and yang. Like, okay. You go from violence to For the Love, which is like not even about like violence, like, oh, kill, 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 but like taking violent, being violent against the things that are keeping you from being great, which is sometimes yourself. So violence is all about killing yourself, your own self-sabotage.
Okay.
And then that's chased with For the Love, which is like a celebration of hip hop as a culture and those things that make me feel great. And then you go from that to Tightrope, which is an argument between. It's not even an argument, because like when you say argument, people automatically think, oh, like the Kendrick Lamar song. No. In the dating space, whereas like one person just wants to be alone and the other chick is very needy. And you get to hear their perspectives and how they go at each other on a record. And that gets chased with Mona Lisa Scars, because despite what I said about you, hey, just know you're perfect. You know what I mean? So like it's both each thing is both sides of the coin. And it flows well. I can't wait for the streets to hear it in its full form, because like people just been catching these singles like straight bullets. But when you realize these bullets all came from the same gun and you listen to them in order.
Yo, that's dope. And if there's anything, I mean, I don't know what I can, but if there's anything I can possibly do for you, bro, please don't hesitate to let me know.
My brother, just tell a friend to tell a friend, man, and just keep supporting the music and just being such a pillar for the culture as you are. Like, this has been one of the funnest combos I've had in a while. Like, I'm late for work right now, but I'm having a good time.
My bad.
You're going to be okay. you know, the party don't stop. So I will. Yo, you know what I'm saying? Like, so
shout out to your manager, too, bro.
Oh, shout out to Anna, man. Yo, she, man, you know, when the world be on fire, sometimes she accelerates the flame, but other times she puts the fire out.
Sometimes you got to burn shit up. I understand that.
You got to, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but it is what it is, man. But I appreciate your energy, man. And next time I come to Ohio, yeah?
Cleveland.
What part? Dayton? You in Dayton?
Cleveland.
Yo, next time I come to Cleveland, I'm pulling up. And because, like, I like food. Cleveland has food. And, yeah, we got to have some food together, man. Fellowship, break bread, talk some rap stuff.
Oh, absolutely, man. Matter of fact, you come to Detroit too, man, because you know that's where I'm from, and I'll be back and forth. So,
yeah, either no one, doubt.
Let me know. I got
so
you.
Do me a favor too. When you get a second, DM me your address, man. I'm gonna mail you a hoodie.
Oh, free shit? Absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah, kid behind you. I hope they didn't hear that.
Anyway,
Okay, man. Anyway, man, truly, truly, truly appreciate you. I'm going to DM that address now. And I'm going to give you my phone number in case you need anything, too, bro.
Yo, fire away, my brother.
All right, no doubt, man. Definitely appreciate
God bless. Thanks
you.
For the opportunity. Thanks for the energy.
Come on, man. You're a superstar. I'll be like, no,
hey,
I don't want to.
Man, you're a star, too, brother.
God bless, not in this man. House. All right, man, I'll holler at you. Have a good one.
You, too.
Okay, that was pretty dope. Yo, really dope conversation, man. A legend in the radio industry, man. Head crack. Truly appreciate that, man. Again, thanks to his manager. She's very, very dope and understanding. Truly appreciate your time, your energy, and your wisdom. Who we got at five? See, today is a special day. We got three shows today, which I've never done ever before. And we got Joe Smith next. And he is a musical legend. He's got movies under his belt, been musical director for everybody. I'll be back in 30 minutes. On that note, y'all have a good one. I'll see you in a minute. Peace.